Hey everyone, welcome back to another edition of Two Guys in Toolbox. I'm your host, Freddie Schaff. First off, I'd like to thanks for everybody tuning in again. And big shout out to my COK friends, and a special thanks to the Double K sisters down in the Tar Heel State. So this week, back on live again with KB. How you doing, KB?
Not good, Freddie. How you doing, man?
So this past week, after our episode that we did last week, you know, KB and I got talking. We felt we let the lot of meat out there on the bone from our previous conversation. Obviously, we wanted to keep it within the 30-minute deadline, you know, so we keep all of our listeners, you know, engaged to what's going on in the industrial maintenance and engineering. So. Hey, how you doing this week, KB?
Doing great for Monday, right? Back to the grind.
That is, you know,
it's cold here in Utah. It's dark.
Dark. Well, I just want to remind the importance of everyone's responsibility for their civic duty. I did have the pleasure today of going to our county courthouse and sitting in on jury selection for a trial. Fortunately, Freddie's got some strong opinions out there, I guess, and the prosecuting attorneys did not feel I'd be a good fit for this one. Can you believe that, KB?
Attaboy, that's the way to do it right there. Tell them how you really feel.
I just fucking hate everybody. I guess that's plain and simple.
Yeah. Yeah, at least you're consistent, right?
You know, I do like you, KB. So, you know, I had a good week in fantasy this week, so I'm actually in a pretty good mood. Laid out the Busch lattes for this evening and drinking just some straight up ice water. How about you, KB?
Yeah, I had a good weekend. Went out and did a little bit of hunting with my son Saturday, and I actually did win at fantasy. I'm 3-7 now, so that's awesome. But it's better than 2-8.
Isn't your buddy 2-8 the guy with the huge head?
Well, you expect that from a guy with a big head like that.
We'll just call him EW for the, this episode.
I didn't realize that was his team. So, yeah, I beat him. I beat him.
Everyone
so that's
good
to know.
EW, so.
No, you don't.
So, you know, after we got off the call last week, KB, you know, what do you want to talk about this week? I know we said, you know, we have a lot of conversations. What do you feel we left out there on the table for our Freddie's followers, we'll call it that?
Well, you know, you and I talked about it, and then I also, you know, I listened to it afterwards, right? And you said, hey, you're going to hate your voice. And I was like, I talk enough. I probably used to my voice. Well, I listened to about 10 seconds, and I thought, holy shit, I hate my voice. So it took me, several days before I listened to it. I mean, me and my wife, we listened to it together, and, you know, she's my greatest ally and my worst critic. And she's like, well, what's your topic on? And I said, well, it's on engagement. Okay. So she listened to me ramble on. She looked up at me. I thought you were talking about engagement. I said, I am. Be quiet. I'll get to it, right? So in another 10 minutes, she's like, so is the engagement part coming or what? I was like, yeah, it'll come. Just got to listen. Anyway, and then I thought after a while, I thought, you know, I did kind of ramble on. So I think maybe some people probably disconnected, and rightfully so. So really kind of, Freddie, what I wanted to do is just kind of summarize my intent of why I went down that road real quick. You know, and how that was successful for us at that point. So I talked a little bit about, you know, our journey that we went through and really kind of, I didn't really mention, but our burning platform at the time for our company was we had to get an LMPU, labor minutes per unit rating, down to an acceptable level, or we were in fear of them moving the plant to a, you know, to a low labor cost country, which was, you know, very realistic for us to do that. So we had to get on board, and maintenance kind of took the lead, I think, really. You know, I mentioned we had a chance to go back to Japan and spend some time in a plant and kind of learn how these guys do things who are already have been successful for generations in manufacturing. They taught us the importance of the maintenance organization. So we learned from that, and you know, we needed to treat ourselves as an asset instead of being acceptable as a liability, which is kind of how we were, right? So we came back, introduced some of these processes. And my point really is, I just wanted to emphasize is the importance of establishing, you know, this ownership mentality or ownership culture in your department for your people to feel like they're part of the, they're part of a winning team, right? Everybody wants to be on a, you know, on a winning team. So we developed these processes in place with the help of our technicians, because the leadership wasn't experts. We were all relatively new to this new change and this new cultural development that we needed to implement. So we used a lot of our people to help develop process. And you asked about, you know, did we have people leave? Yeah, we had people leave. People got, you know, didn't like the direction we were going. And like I mentioned, more power to them. They moved on. We've had people that learned from what we were able to do as a team, and they were now marketable. They've taken those skill sets and they were desirable to other companies, and, you know, more power to them for that, right? Exactly. Moved on. So, but anyway, I just wanted to, you know, mention that the importance of these processes. So a lot of times as maintenance groups, and we were the same way, it's real easy to get, you know, caught up in the fact that, hey, the material's bad, right? We don't have any control over the material, or it's old equipment, or the equipment's designed poorly. This company I worked for was growing so fast, and this equipment was hitting the floor so quick that a lot of times they were, it wasn't effectively debugged before we actually had to start producing products. So, so we kind of got caught up in those excuses, but, you know, I mentioned the significant downtime process is really instrumental for us, because it required us to manage and focus on a certain event, right? And, but as we started looking at some of our systemic issues that we did have control over, training, right? We have control over training, whether that's external. A lot of times we think training has to be external outside the plant. Now that's ideal in some cases, and sometimes it's worth it to do that, but that's not always realistic. So a lot of internal training classes, and instead of having, you know, everybody's got the guy in the plant who kind of rides in on his white horse, and after the graveyard crew or night shift crew has been fighting for a machine, fighting with a machine, and, you know, this white knight rides in on his horse and saves the day, and off he goes, and everybody's patting him on the back. Well, why don't we try to develop, you know, 10 of these guys on white horses instead of just one? So that kind of mentality. And then we would utilize that expert to conduct some in-house training. And that was kind of what was expected of him or her to conduct that training. And it's very easy to measure the effectiveness of that based on, you know, meantime to repair for your plan or calls or downtime. You know, as long as you have the ability to capture good data, you can see what the benefits of those activities were, right? So training was real critical for us, and training that our guys thought they needed, right? As we looked at an event, we would ask, you know, why did it take so long to repair? Not necessarily what was the root cause of the problem, but why, we'd also ask, why did it take you so long to make the repair? Well, a lot of times it was because of improper training, or they didn't have the right tools. You know, they needed a brass punch, and we had to search all over for one. Well, God, let's get our guys some brass punch. You know, just ask those systemic issues are easy to solve. Preventative maintenance. We talk a lot about preventative maintenance, right? But really, what does it mean? And, you know, our goal isn't to do more PMs, right? I mean, our goal really should be to do zero PMs, because that's lost time for production, but that's not the case. So when we do a PM, we ask, you know, are the instructions concise and clear, right? Do they make sense to everybody? Is the frequency accurate? You know, are we doing them monthly? Could we do them every other month? Or could we do them quarterly? Or do we even need to do them at all? I mean, does it make sense? Sometimes we found certain components, it was cheaper and more effective to run them to failure. I mean, which, as stupid as that sounds, but we have examples where that was more.
Because there is a specific philosophy to run to failure, depending on the issue.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something real quick. You know, you've told me a story this week about you had a specific individual that, you know, when you were going through this whole process of, you know, engaging your team members, did you have one employee or team member during this journey that really sticks out in your mind? And could you like share that experience with us?
Oh man, I got hundreds of stories. I've got a couple that kind of come to mind. The one I think I know you're talking about, but let me kind of step back to another one that was really kind of an epiphany, more of an observation than anything, but because at the time it was with the company that I currently work at now, that I actually had left and came back to here in the last just several years ago. But anyway,
you married the same woman twice.
You know, back
right?
when we Yeah, I actually did do that.
That's for Freddie's Ransom Graves, which is episode. Okay, I'm sorry, KB. Okay, tell me the story. Did I lose you, KB?
A friend of mine were together. You know who he is, Freddie. But a good friend of mine, we're standing there, we're looking across the factory, and we kind of made a comment about a guy who's now in a leadership position. And I said, you know, Bob, do you remember back, you know, when we started this journey and we didn't know if we were coming or going, and we were tasked at times, you know, sales are down or profits are, you know, low. So what's usually the first to get cut? You know, everybody wants to cut the indirect folks, right? And maintenance is a big target. So we would be like trading baseball cards, you know, I'll give you Johnny Bench for Roger Clemens, or I'll give you Joe for Bill, or we're going to let so-and-so go. Well, this particular guy was always on that jagged edge of, you know, if we'd had to cut one or two more, he would have been gone. And that's, you think, man, what an injustice we would have done to not only him and his family, for sure, most importantly, but also what an injustice we would have done to the company had we let that guy go, because now he's a top performer, he's part of management, he's making decisions, you know, he's orchestrating crews, getting results. But because we didn't have any processes or systems in place, which is our fault as leadership, you know, we could have elected to let this guy go, because we had no way of measuring his value. And then we put some tools in place, and look how successful he is. I mean, just putting some tools in place and engaging people and getting people's buy-in and asking people to be part of the solution, man, they just perform, right? And that's a great example. So that was kind of a more of an epiphany thing. That was just an observation that was kind of impactful. Working for a company, help with a particular maintenance group at this plant become more efficient, right? Developing processes and understanding their data, they were finally starting to collect and put some processes in place that allowed them to become more efficient. So this, when I went out of this plant, I mean, I'd never been to a place where there's so much disdain and distrust between the people on the floor and management. So when I get there, right, they just think I'm an extension of management. So, you know, nobody liked me, but it took a while. And you know, it's pretty obvious to them after a short period of time that I kind of had walked in their shoes. You know, I was just a guy, just a maintenance guy.
You had street credibility, what I liked about.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I did. So anyway, I met a particular guy and we kind of hit it off. I liked him. He liked to hunt. I liked to hunt. He likes to golf. I like to golf. So we had some things in common, and we're both kind of stubborn. I think maybe that was part of the draw. But this dude knew everything, right? This son of a bitch knew everything. He was the smartest guy in the room, no matter what room he was in. So it was the end of a long day, and it was in the fall, and I'd get these rashes on my arm, right? And it's just driving me crazy. And he's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Fuck, it looks like I'm scratching my arm, man. It's driving me nuts." He said, "You ever put any of this such and such grass?" Well, this particular part of the country, they grow this particular grass, I guess. I don't know. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Follow me." So we go outside, and he points to the ground. There's a particular grass. He says, "Take some of that grass and grind it up, rub it on your arm, and itch will go away," right? So I'm like, okay. And he was a smart guy. He actually was a real smart guy. We all work guys like that, you know. He was a stereotypical maintenance guy, big gruffy looking beard and you know, shirt untucked and just kind of just to come across like a hard ass, but a good guy and a smart guy, very capable guy, but just kind of had an attitude, right? Just had an attitude. So anyway, one thing led to another. And next thing I know, it's me and him are screaming at each other. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to call him John. I'm going to say, John, fuck you. And he's like, well, fuck you too. I says, you know, I'm just out here trying to help you out. But I says, I don't know how you put up with it. You know, you're the smartest guy out here. Why do you put yourself through so much agony? Coming to work every day and working with a bunch of incompetent bones like us, you know? I said, you know what? I bet your wife thinks you're an asshole if you go home and act like that around your family. And then he gets pissed and, you know, it's fuck you. And then off we go and I stomp out of there, head back to the hotel. I get thinking about it. You know, that was probably because he was really my customer, right? I'm thinking, yeah, that's probably not the best way to, I could have handled that. So the next morning, I bump into him and he actually approaches me and says, hey, you got a minute? And I was like, yeah, man, I've been wanting to talk to you anyway. And I says, look, John, I apologize about last night. I said, it was a bad night with both of us. I was out of line. I apologize. And he says, yeah, I was too. He says, you know, he goes, I went home and told my wife what you said. And he says, she told me that I was right. I am an asshole. And I says, well, I says, you know, you might be, but that wasn't my place to say. I says, look, I'm just trying to, I just want to help you guys be successful. That's all. I says, so next time we have a significant event, a significant downtime event on one of your machines, I want to help you with it, right? Not because I'm an expert, but I can ask some questions that maybe, you know, somebody might not ask just because from experience, you know, asking certain questions that somebody might not necessarily ask. So anyway, Mike, long story short, we went out. It was basically real quick. It was a bowl feeder that the parts would come to this bowl feeder and the bowl feeder wouldn't, as it rotated around, it wouldn't agitate the parts. So they couldn't put as many parts in this bowl feeder as they need to. So it had an air bayer that dropped these parts into five or six of these machines. Well, one material operator couldn't keep up because it's designed to, you know, say handle 300 parts, but it could only handle 75 because it wouldn't break the parts up in a jam anyway. So I was just there to help. I mean, John and some production folks, just some people on the team came up with this idea to put these posts in there. Anyway, put these phenolic posts in there and how to change the height on them a little bit. And man, it nailed it. I mean, it was a home run. A lot of times we'll just get base hits, right? Which is fine. I mean, as long as our mentality was, are we better today than we were yesterday? Sometimes we're way better. Sometimes we're slightly better, but better is better, right? So if it's a simple fix, whether it's a PM or maybe some training or, you know, dealing with a spares issue, or it's a machine modification, whatever the opportunity is. So anyway, they put these posts on there, went out and tried it. Man, it ran like a dream. So not only did we fix the one machine, but we were able to roll that across the other machines. So I think it was kind of interesting on this whole process. On the bottom of this bolt feeder, there was 4/4 28 holes in there. We're like, well, that's kind of weird. Why? I wonder why they're there, but good for us. Now we don't have to take it down, drill and tap some holes. We're just going to use those 1/4 20 threads and put our posts right through them. After we researched it later, we come to find out that it was designed to have posts in there, but the engineer that brought them out, it was kind of a major retro they'd done on these machines. As the engineer that brought them out, he got pulled in another direction and he never finished the project. So there's an example of no processes or systems, right? There's a good example. Just pull Joe off, and put him on the next one, and leave his garbage for production to deal with, you know. But anyway,
so can I see a question real quick?
Anyway, it was a good, quick, it was a great example. KB.
So, John, for this scenario over the course of your career, how long had he been with the company when you first met him?
Oh, yeah. 20 plus years, long timers, good company, okay. People like working there.
He had been conditioned to, this is how we do business. You know, he was the guy, I like to call him the Superman, the guys that wear the cape and come flying in at the last minute of the time and save the day. But is he still with the company?
Oh, I haven't been out there for a while. I would imagine, you know, I mean, he was older, maybe. So he was probably, you know, to the point where he'd be looking to retire. So he probably wasn't looking to change careers. So I would imagine, but I don't know. It's been, that's been
so,
7 years.
So
ago,
do you think after that scenario, that situation you guys were in, and, you know, obviously putting the system in place, you were working for this other company, XYZ company at a time, and you were there to help this team out. Do you think it and assisted with John Stain in that role?
Well, here's let me tell you my thoughts on that. So let me finish the story, because here's the impactful part to me. That was just another one of the many successes that we've kind of encountered, right? And we've encountered many failures, but at least we're trying something. We're trying something.
Exactly.
That's the key. You got to try something. You got to be able to baseline that change. But anyway, so here's the kind of the funny thing, Chad, that I hope answers your question, or Freddie. Sorry, Fred. So we put these countermeasures in place, and I mentioned the last meeting, we used to have these reviews where we would bring, you know, a customer in, and we would showcase an employee. What did you do? You had this problem. You put these countermeasures in. What were the results? Right. Reviews. You could call them, they were called different things, but basically it's a management review. You know, it's a half hour review of the data. But the intent was to focus on a change or an improvement that was made by a person or a team, and then celebrate those and see what they did. So anyway, this plant had these reviews. Well, this was such a good one that they wanted him to present this to this crew. And this casual, I mean, he knows all the people in these reviews, you know, they're production managers and production supervisors and maintenance management, and sometimes there'll be quality folks in or safety folks, but whatever. So, and they give this kind of a formal presentation. It's out on the shop floor, and we'll put some charts up and show the before and after and how much money it saved or how much downtime it saved or how much uptime it developed or whatever it is we want to show. Right. So we had done that. Well, that was such a big hit and one of the better ones that they had a corporate crew come through the plant, and they asked him if he would be willing to, they asked him, they said, hey, you're going to show this to this group of folks, right? We would all be a little bit nervous about that. So I had left, the contract was up. I was no longer out there, but I went back out to the plant for another purpose. And I got out there at the time this tour was coming through, right? So that tour was scheduled for that day. Well, I wanted to go back and just see some of the maintenance guys I'd worked with for almost a year and establish some relationships. And I'll never forget this. So picture John, kind of a burly guy with a beard and kind of gruff and
shirt undone,
gold up sleeves and shirt on. Yeah, shirt untucked, cigarettes in his pocket. You know, the stereotypical maintenance guy that people want to portray. But anyway, so I walk into this lunchroom, and there's maintenance guys, and I'm talking, and I look over, and I see this dude in a button-down white shirt, clean-shaven, black slacks, and nice shoes. I look at him, and I was like, John, is that you? He's like, yeah, fuck you. He says, I said, dude, man, you look good. Yeah, well, anyway, so he's coming across. But my point was, here's something that we asked the guy to do, something maybe a little bit different. We gave him, you know, we asked him to be accountable. We asked him to perform. We had the ability to measure his results on how effective he was. But we asked him to do what he's trained to do. We asked him to do what he likes to do, what he's good at doing. And no, it's not rocket science. We just asked him to demonstrate his capabilities, and we gave him the tools to be successful. And we showcased it, and we celebrated it. Well, they asked him to present this in front of this group, and he took the pride in that enough to shave his face. But I don't imagine he owned a white shirt. Shit, he probably had to go buy one. So my point is, he a better employee? I would say yeah. And more importantly, maybe is he a better person? Is he a better husband? Is he a better dad? You know, I don't know, but I would imagine. So the trickle down of that is huge, right? And I would imagine he enjoys his job better. And he's the kind of guy, he was the kind of guy that creates a wake. We've all been around people like that. You get people that can just have a natural ability to create a wake. They can create a positive wake, and they can create a negative wake, but that wake's powerful. And if you can win over people like that, And John was that kind of person. People respected him and liked him, I think. And But anyway, so he's created this wake, and now it's a positive wake. So he's pulling people in. So that's just huge. I mean, it's just the benefits of that one little example, that one little success could, last for years, and other people. But anyway, it was cool. You asked for an example. That was probably my favorite example, my most memorable example. Although,
KB, that's a great example, where you were able to go into a facility. Granted, you weren't engaged, on a day to day. You weren't working for that company. You worked for XYZ company coming in to help them out. But, probably when it was all said and done, these guys, they knew John, who was the biggest asshole they had known probably for years, but he was very knowledgeable. But once he was recognized for that success, it probably created a trickle down effect in the rest of the team where it's like, these guys known John for years, and man, he's the biggest jerk, whatever, so on and so forth. But once they saw John was recognized for his knowledge and his success, in the project he worked with you on, it was just massive trickle down from there. Everybody wanted to take part in that, and I think that's really where, the recognizing the team members, this situation where, hell, you come back a year later, you didn't even know who John was, but everybody wants to be John.
Yeah.
So they're out there getting that, like you said, that, the singles, they're not worried about hitting the home run every single time. But I think that goes a long ways, recognizing those key people. And then it just creates this effect where everybody wants to be part of that. Everybody wants to come in and be clean shaven, sit, have the opportunity to sit in front of the president of the company, CEO of the company, whomever, senior leadership, and, share in their successes, not only from a personal standpoint, a professional, the pride of the workmanship that he accomplished.
Yeah, I think everybody wants to be part of a winning team, right?
You don't want to be on my fantasy 500 team.
No. But I think you need to know if you need to have a way to. You need to have the ability to know if you're winning or losing, right? That's also really, really critical. But
good.
But yeah, good comment.
I think we're approaching that magic hour before us two old guys put people to sleep, and we could probably sit here and we'll probably have a conversation later this week about this episode, and it's like we left more out there on the table. But hey, appreciate getting on, KB. Like I said, this week we're going to start a filler episode. We're going to call it Freddy's Rants and Rays for all of the faithful followers out there. And remember to drink the Kool-Aid, folks. We want to get everybody on board with this, send me a video or an audio clip of, just something of what's going on in your facility, maybe your trials, your tribulations you're going through. Send it out to me. You can send it to FreddyShaft70@gmail.com, and totally anonymous if you want to put your clip out there. And I think, KB, I'm going to have the first rant and rave this week, because over the last 3 weeks I've been on the project from hell. So I'm going to start the episode out this week, and hey, if you've got any rants and raves you want to hit out there, send me over the audio clip, and I'll get it out there. Obviously, I'll scrub out the who it's from, but appreciate coming on again with me, KB, and thanks for everybody listening in. We'll see you next week. Any comments, concerns, complaints, or hell, if you just want to shoot the shit with KB and I, just send me an email over to freddyshaft70@gmail.com, and everybody have a good and safe week out there. Okay, sounds good, KB.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later, man. See you.
Bye.